Welcome to Our House with one of Australia's leading auctioneers, Rod Amos, and buyer's agent, Matt Sharp. And now for your dose of information and observation about real estate across the nation. Let's go live to your host, the voice of the National Rugby League, Steve Allen.
Yeah, welcome to episode 3 of Our House. Great to have you on board. Hope you and your family have been well. And let's get straight down to business. Firstly, thanks to Sean and Christy Hudson-Smith. Once again, we're broadcasting from the beautiful office of Ray White Terrigal. Okay, this episode we're off to Griffith in country New South Wales. Also Geelong, the home of the Mighty Cats, and a gorgeous beachside location that we all love. We'll crunch the numbers on Port Macquarie. Just before we go to the boys, shout out to the team at Ray White Point Cook in Victoria. They gave us a like on Instagram. Great to have you guys on board, and I see you've won numerous awards for elite business development. So congratulations, and great to have you listening from Victoria. Also to Ty Blanche and the team at LJ Hooker Commercial. Ty used to come on the radio with us on a regular basis. He's provided extensive commercial sales over the last couple of months, so we'll get to those on episode 4 of Our House. Right now, though, let's go to Matt Sharp from Sharp Property Buyers. And Matt, how's the feedback been for you after our first 2 episodes?
Yeah, it's been really positive, surprisingly. I've been inundated with messages, texts, emails. The feedback's been fantastic. So thank you to all of our listeners, and not just locally, you know, across Australia, which is awesome.
It's a fairly popular subject, though, Matt, even for those not yet involved in real estate, I suppose. But Steve, you were saying you've actually had some response Australia-wide.
Yeah. The first episode, of course, we went to Palm Beach on the Gold Coast, the 4221 postcode, my old hometown, of course.
Yeah, you've got a bit of a voting crew up there, haven't you? Yeah. Steve Allen's crew, they call them up at Palm Beach.
Absolutely. And we also put the spotlight on Fremantle and got some great intel from my dear friend Helen Moore, one of the best newsreaders in Australian radio. And apart from being a stunning area with a really vibrant culture, great pubs, cafes and restaurants, Matt, real positive signs moving forward.
Yeah, certainly there's a recovery happening over there. And it's interesting that you mentioned a couple of those suburbs that we spoke about last time, because I actually had a few people reach out to me saying that they're looking at holidaying in those destinations, whether it be Hallett Cove, Palm Beach or Fremantle. You know, it's something to think about. And I think that's awesome that we can promote a couple of areas that we visited and, you know, a couple of areas that we look at.
Interesting thing with the Fremantle, there's a method of sale I utilise that originated in WA and the company's based over there. And I rang up and said, look, just tell me whether I'm right or wrong. I just did a little bit of a positive forecast for Fremantle, and they said, yeah, we think the same thing. You know, WA still doing a tough over there, but certainly with what's on offer in Fremantle, I had it verified by 3 different people over there that, yeah, it's a spot that seemed to be worthwhile.
So I mentioned earlier, we're off to Griffith later in the episode. One of the reasons why, I guess you'd call her our second daughter. Zoe Stimson is down there working as a speech pathologist, and she's looking to buy her first home. She's been to some auctions. She was the underbidder on a home that recently sold, and she was super excited. So we'll crunch the numbers. We'll put Griffith under the spotlight. And Matt, you want to go to the home of the Mighty Cats, the greatest team of all that play at Cadinia Park.
If you get down there, if you're lucky enough to be in Geelong over a weekend, I highly recommend that you try and find a little local pub or establishment and settle in and watch the game. I know they're very, very fanatical down there about their football, and it's hard to walk down the streets of Geelong without seeing a flag somewhere. So get amongst it.
Right. One area I've got to ask Matt, though, is Geelong. You know, how big an area is it? Because I've just got this feeling, you know, you've got Port Phillip Bay, Williamtown, and the end, it's almost from Williamtown, virtually back down to Torquay would be the Shire of Geelong. But the township itself?
Yeah, so Geelong, there's no doubt about it, it has a variety of different suburbs. Today, I think we're mainly just going to focus on central Geelong, south Geelong, west Geelong as well. Certainly it goes all the way down to beautiful Torquay, which where my auntie and uncle actually used to live. Beautiful, beautiful part of the world down there. Bell's Beach, fantastic spot. But yeah, there are definitely a lot of personalities within Geelong. Some areas, you know, that aren't so good, and some areas that are absolutely fantastic.
Okay, we'll elaborate further on Geelong a bit later in the episode. Right now though, What caught your eye this week?
Mate, what caught my eye was actually I visited a handful of auctions over the weekend, and luckily enough for us that we have one of the best auctioneers in the country sitting at our table. But very, very fascinating, and an observation that I always see, and that's very consistent throughout auctions that I visit, is I always see four types of bidders, okay? So there's the non-bidder who turns up, they registered a bid, they grab a paddle, and they do absolutely nothing. They don't even raise their hand, they don't make a sound. The next one is a sales agent representing a buyer on the phone. Now, I've never understood that. For the life of me, I don't understand that, because the aim of the sales agent is to purchase the property, you know, or to sell the property for the highest amount of money, right? So why someone would get them to represent them at an auction, I just don't understand. The third one is the bank of mum and dad, of course. If their kids absolutely have to buy this property, they're going to chip in and say, here's an extra five, here's an extra 10. And the last bidder that I always see at auctions is the alpha, right? This can be male or female, but no matter what, they want to flex their muscles there and they want to be very, very dominant within that crowd. And I'd love to hear Rod's thoughts, you know, and are there other personalities that you're seeing out there? But they're typically the four that I see at almost every single auction that I visit.
Matt, I think you summed it up very well. And I think it's more important to listen to the way that you summed it up. Somebody's just arrived at auctions and you're looking at different behaviours. As an auctioneer, yeah, I tend to take a little bit differently. But your assessment is actually largely accurate from my point of view too. The interesting thing, and I will say to every single agent, vendor, no matter how many people are at auction, rule of thumb is there's going to be roughly 50% of people actually put their hand in the air. Now, I don't know what it is about serial people that attend auctioneers and stand there, whether you're trying to impress girlfriend, partner, wife, the next door neighbours or something else, that will turn up and register and not do a thing. They may be doing it to show interest and not in a position to bid. Now, I will say to oftentimes, now you're aware, Matt, as well too, Steve, it's really difficult people getting finance set up. We discussed that on the first podcast of the year, but it is still continuing. So what will often happen is I will say to people, well, look, if you cannot bid, at least let me show the vendor that you're interested in trying to purchase it. That way it puts you in a good position to negotiate if it doesn't sell at auction. So at least register. I know you probably won't be able to bid, but even by registering, I can acknowledge to the vendor that you're somebody that may be worthwhile discussing with if it doesn't sell at auction.
And Matt, because of Rod's prowess, you said that he made people feel really comfortable and that led to stronger bidding later in the auction. Is that correct?
One thing that Rod definitely did different compared to most auctioneers out there was he made everyone feel comfortable within the crowd. He didn't dismiss any bids that come his way. He didn't balk at any bids that came towards his way. And I think he actually got a really, really good result for the vendor because of that. Sometimes I go to auctions and someone might put a bid in that might be a little bit low ball, but look, we want to get the ball rolling, and the auctioneer will balk at them. And I don't know if belittling is the right word, but yeah, just I guess it unsettles the crowd, right? And if you have these bidders that we speak about that turn up and they actually don't do anything, something like that might end up putting them off. And then if they're all sitting on the fence, you know, maybe they're just going to be like, oh, I don't really want to be put on show here by the more experienced auctioneer.
Hey, Rod, for our listeners around the country and also the overseas audience, tell us about the property on the coast that you sold.
Well, look, it was a fairly unique one. It was 4,200 square metres of R2 residential in Springfield and had probably the most immaculate, largely original six-year-old home. It was apparently built by a master builder, and it was evident. But when Matt's talking about the way I managed it, the way I manage it is by understanding who the buyers are. I'm lucky enough on the coast that, you know, I'm often crossing paths with people I've met before. So I understood the motivation from some people, and I also knew that they would see higher value than where they started. So in that case, I was prepared to take a bid, and it was only 30% under the selling price in order to get it going, because I was absolutely confident that person would go ahead. If I wasn't sure I had doubts about the bidder, I may have played it differently. But in that case, it just, knowing the market, knowing the property, knowing the buyers were showing interest in it, that was a fair and reasonable expectation to kick it off there. We'd encourage other bidders to come through, and that's what we did. But again, we had four registered bidders, Matt, and what did it turn out? At what percentage were bidding?
Yeah, 50%. What about the poor old bidder on the phone with the sales agent? What's happening there?
Look, what it is, and it's a reasonable thing. Oftentimes, people can't make it to the auction. So it could be work, it could be family responsibilities, it could be the fact they might, for whatever reason, not want to be there in person. They might not want to be visible to other bidders. They might not want to be visible to the neighbour or the owner for some unknown reason. They can nominate somebody to bid on their behalf. So that's a letter of authority that has to be signed. They can nominate friend or family to bid on their behalf, which, believe me, is a huge responsibility and a nerve-wracking responsibility. Or they can nominate a particular agent within that company or a buyer's agent like yourself, Matt, to bid on your behalf. So basically, the agent's only taking the same instructions a person would be giving them if they were there and present anyhow.
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned the authority to bid, which is obviously what I have for my clients and put in writing. What I have a question for you is, and what I always encourage my buyers to do is, I have an agreed price in writing prior to going to auction, because I don't want things to get messy in case we miss out, or if they tell me to increase the bid over the phone or whatever, and then, you know, it's my word against theirs. And I don't know if that's across the board, but I'm interested to know, is that how it typically operates with a sales agent?
The way I always suggest when the sales agent I'm working with, and if I'm the auctioneer and the sales agent, I'll get somebody else to witness the conversation as well. So I will receive instructions from the vendor about whether to increase a bid and what make of the bid to. I will then have a second party also listen to that conversation, receive the instructions. That way it's absolutely clear that we have been asked, requested by that particular bidder to take it up to the next offer. So everybody's covered like that. I've never heard of it happening, but I think in this world we need to always have the action plans in place and the safety steps as well for all parties.
Okay, boys, what caught my eye? Jennifer Hawkins and her partner Jake Wall selling their Newport home for a record price, $24.5 million. Jennifer, of course, former Miss Universe and at one stage a Newcastle Knights cheerleader, and Jake in the building industry. So what a rock star couple, and what an incredible result.
Absolutely. And a beautiful part of the world, Newport, as well. I actually got married down there at Palm Beach. Fantastic. And I believe they're in the market for a property up here. Is that right? On the Central Coast?
Yeah, there is speculation, Matt, that they'll move to the Central Coast. But there's also reports they may have found a home in Whale Beach on Sydney's northern beaches. 3,300 square metres and a 1950s style. So I'd love to see what they do with that. Here's another one that caught my eye, and this is especially for you, Matt. Former rugby league star Todd Carney, he sold a Waverley investment property, rents for $695 per week. Selling agent was McGrath, and the figure was undisclosed, but it's around the $900,000 mark. But he bought it for $607,000 back in 2011.
That seems like he's done pretty well out of there. And everyone that knows me and knows what I do as a profession, I don't really like selling. And given Todd's age, obviously I don't know his personal situation, but if I was advising him, I would have been telling him to hold on to that property, because I think if he's purchased it for $600,000 and he's receiving $690 thereabouts rental income per week, I think he's set himself up to be in a pretty good position. But I wish him all the best. And yeah, Waverley's also a good little spot there.
Is he still playing in Byron Bay?
Good question. I know he was last year. I'm not sure if their season's still going ahead at the moment, given everything that's happening. But yeah, certainly could play.
Yeah, fantastic guy, Todd Carney. I spent some time with him during the Legends of League, and we wish him all the best. Another one that caught my eye, boys, is CBD Apartments in Sydney. Now, some of them are being sold for $250,000 below their sale price. So that's around about 8 to 15% below their original price. My question is, are you guys seeing any stories or hearing stories about hardship around the country?
Look, we are certainly not on the Central Coast at this stage, but I think that is one of the areas where typically you're going to see it happen. In many cases by foreign equity, for family members studying in Australia. So you've got close proximity to the city, but importantly, the universities. So what's happened with foreign students in Australia right now is zero. So we have apartments sitting there. There's no genuine use there. And also those were bought by local families, for instance, investors that are being utilised. They might have been squeezing four students into the apartments. Pretty hard to do anything when you don't have a rental income. And I imagine that is the kind of market that's going to be particularly hard hit. High return, low cost rental properties, units, apartments, anywhere surrounding universities, places of learning, when you've got 30% of the particular of the students there not able to get into the country, we're going to have a lot of vacancies, and that's going to be the first point of call to see what happens in real estate.
Yeah, I'm hearing similar things. I guess in terms of an investment strategy, you need to be very careful. And part of it, I guess, a defensive strategy that we implement is that your investment property needs to appeal to multiple demographics and not just one. So if you're going to buy an apartment right near a university, chances are that you are heavily reliant on that university to be operating at all times in order to have tenants there. And also, if you're looking at a holiday let apartment somewhere, obviously you're heavily reliant on the holiday and tourism industry to be operating well in order for you to get a return on your investment. So they're things that you need to factor in whenever you're looking at an investment property. Obviously, no one could predict what's happening now, but that's certainly why we're seeing, you know, some vacancy rates and also seeing some tourism hubs struggling at the moment.
Look, I think that's the important point, that the best made plans have been turned upside down by COVID, because these are the properties that we're seeing being affected by implications of that. First time ever, and likely the last time it will see it happen. But that's one thing you cannot forecast. No matter how carefully you go through, you do your study, you do your budgeting, you do your demographics, nobody could forecast this happening. So for investors like that, yeah, it is an incredibly tough situation. Majority of people may not take advantage of the mortgage relief, though. But at the same time, that ends for so many people by the end of September. Most people have done it for a 6-month basis. So I think that's where we're going to see further fallout, when we see that mortgage relief. Basically, banks are eventually going to need to get paid. How long they'll extend that out beyond the 6-month moratorium is up to anybody. The other one I'll say as well too is, we're looking at the holiday areas, Matt and Steve. We're seeing it, like Terrigal is absolutely flat chart. The properties that run holiday Airbnb short-term accommodation on the Central Coast, you'd be lucky to get yourself in booked into anything on the Central Coast between now and Christmas. And New South Wales is in a prime position where we're not getting the effect upon hospitality so many other states is, because we've got a population who would largely travel outside of the state for holidays. We're now stuck within our state. Our numbers are greater than the numbers coming in from outside traditionally. So we're going to see those tourist hospitality areas, as long as they're able to trade, basically come out of this pretty well, I think, given what we're seeing.
And that's the silver lining, isn't it? You know, to this terrible situation that we're in, you know, we're going to be fortunate enough to travel to regional parts of New South Wales and invest and spend some money in the local communities there and hopefully boost those economies instead of going overseas, going interstate. I think that is the silver lining to the situation that we're in.
Just before we go to our three locations, Rod, you've got the auction results nationwide, and these are for the week ending September 5.
Look, very interesting, isn't it, Steve? Remember back in the days of radio, we're always looking at Melbourne. They're always 25 to 30% above the numbers that we were doing across Greater Sydney. This is really where COVID-19 and the effect upon Victoria hit. Sydney across the weekend, that's Greater Sydney, including Central Coast, 488 properties went to auction originally. Melbourne, it was only 106. So already that's about 1/6 of the normal numbers. But most importantly, when we look at the numbers that went to auction on the day, Greater Sydney 437, Melbourne only 16. So I mean, can you imagine the restrictions just trying to get people through homes? Matt, as you were saying, not able to go within a 5-kilometre radius out of the area, and then only for sports. So what do? Get on your push bike, ride to the auction that's 2 kilometres away, and stand there with a face mask on in order to bid at an auction.
Very, very tough times down there. I actually have some colleagues down there that ride into their training and their triathlon stuff, and they basically just do a 5-kilometre block run 10 times or 5 times.
Round the rest of the states, Brisbane, really good results, 69%. That's one of the better performances. Adelaide again. Steve, for years, Adelaide's been doing well at auction, 79% clearance rate. Canberra was 81%, and then back to Sydney, 67%. So it's fair to say that Sydney, when you look at the results around the rest of the country, is being impacted second worst in relation to people relating to the property market. But the surprising thing with the Central Coast is we're showing capitalisation, and our clearance rates for a region are up traditionally on what it is. Normally we'd have Sydney kind of market like this. Well, as we say, we averaged to 67%, but the Central Coast was 65%. If it had been a normal market, it might have been 50% we'd be averaging. So the Central Coast is outperforming what it's normally used to, which is why the clearance rates are really indicative of the optimism, the health, and the vitality within a market. And given that Australia is trying to claw its way out of COVID, these are astounding results with Adelaide and Canberra either side of the 80%.
Okay, boys, let's go around the country. Matt, just before you give us the breakdown on Geelong, how about we get in the mood? Here's the theme song.
We are Geelong, the greatest team of all. We are Geelong, we're always on the ball. We play the game as it should be played, at home or far.
fantastic little city, Geelong. It's only located an hour from Melbourne, CBD. And, you know, beautiful, beautiful homes down in Geelong. Some period homes down there that will match anything as good as what you'll see in Sydney in the inner west or in the inner city suburbs of both Melbourne and Sydney. Some beautiful beaches there. Just a fantastic place. And, you know, traditionally Geelong, you know, had an industrial, hardworking feel, but more recently, more young entrepreneurs and small businesses are coming into the area and they're absolutely thriving. It's an extremely diverse economy down there. Huge, huge population growth down there. And the reasons for that, you know, are because of the lifestyle, because of the affordability. A lot of young people are moving down there. So there are young families moving in. Also lots of investors. And on the back of the small businesses thriving and the young entrepreneurs, it offers a huge, huge amount of opportunities down there.
The largest demographic group is the 20 to 39 age group, and that is 25% above the next highest being the 60 plus. So this is a real young shift, and that certainly gets down to the affordability. But the one thing you mentioned about the fact that, yes, you've got multi-million dollar properties, you've got properties on large land, property with ocean views, but you've got these wonderful updated or ready to renovate weatherboard style homes, lovely in the kind of 60s architecture down there too, on big parcel land in Geelong. You can trade a great home and lifestyle down there for around about the $450,000 to $500,000 an entry level home, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you're a first home buyer or a young professional and you're looking in and around Melbourne, you can't get anything in Melbourne, you know, for say sub $600,000 or $700,000. You might get a one or two bedroom apartment, whereas down in Geelong, you know, you just get so much more for your money. You can get a beautiful period home, walk to the beach, you can be in the thick of it, you can be in Geelong West, you can be, you know, right near the main street with all the best cafes and restaurants that Geelong has to offer.
What else are you seeing, Rod? And where does this data come from?
Well, the interesting thing I'm seeing is the household income. When we talk about a broad demographic, we actually have a huge proportion under $500 a week. Now, let's say if we number that, that's just under 300. And then we've got this almost flat curve right across the other ones, and $2,500 a week and over. We've got another huge spike, and that's a population there of 400. There seems to be a really broad range when we look at the demographics there on income and the rest of it too. Home loan repayments. How's this one for drilling down the detail, Matt? The average mortgage size is $1,800 to $2,400 a week.
A month?
Sorry, a month.
I just wanted to chat about the disparity in income and affordability down in Geelong. It's worth noting that there are some areas there, you know, that you certainly need to stay away from, you know, not for just investment reasons, but, and I'm not going to mention any of the suburbs, but some areas down there are quite unsafe and a little bit volatile. Whereas, you know, a couple of streets or a couple of blocks over, you know, they're quite beautiful and highly regarded and extremely safe and highly sought after as well. So as I mentioned at the top, lots of different personalities within Geelong, and you really need to know the area quite well if you're going to go down there and move, or if you're going to go down there and invest. It's fantastic that there's a young age demographic down there. I know there are a lot of young professionals. I know the economy is extremely diverse. The infrastructure between Geelong and Melbourne can be improved. I know that that train ride isn't great, but you know what train ride is. But I think the long-term outlook for Geelong is really, really positive. The other thing I will say is if you're floating around Geelong on a Saturday or a Sunday afternoon, try and get a Cats game in. You don't have to go to the ground, but just park yourself at a bar. They are absolutely fanatical. It's a little bit like the Newcastle locals, right? You go to Newcastle, and if there's a game on, everyone is just filled up in those bars watching the rugby league. I think it's fantastic down there.
And they're a superstar team. Gary Ablett Jr., Joel Selwood, one of the toughest men to ever lace on a boot, and the Tomahawk as well, Tommy Hawkins, and they really are the pride of the area. Haven't won a flag for a while, but they're right in the thick of it in 2020. Rod, on your screen, is that 42.8% home ownership in Geelong?
That's actually rented properties. It's a huge proportion of people that are tenants in. This is Geelong, just the suburb Geelong, not Geelong Shire. But yeah, let's look at these numbers in Geelong. 2016, 891 properties are rented, but an incredible number still, 649 are fully owned, 474 properties are being purchased. But as I say, that's an incredible percentage of rented properties. The other one I had here too, just casting some other figures about too, was the average weekly rent. The average weekly rent in there, the largest proportion fall in only the 270 $375 to $349 per week. It's a mixture of predominantly freestanding homes. About 60% of the remainder tend to be units, flats throughout it.
All right, boys, we're off to Griffith now in country New South Wales. And let's bring in our cameraman who's in the room with us, Dangerous Dave Moore, who works for NBN TV. But when you're in Griffith, you work for Win TV. What are your thoughts about Griffith?
Beautiful place. So it's the food bowl of the country. So a lot of Australia's produce is grown in that sort of local region. Beautiful wineries down there as well. If you're sort of going out for a day drive, you can get around. And designed by the same gentleman who designed Canberra.
So our second daughter, Zoe Stimson's working down there as a speech pathologist. Where would she be, Dave?
Griffith Hospital, Griff-based hospital, I believe it's called. They're currently in the middle of doing a major upgrade / building a new hospital down in Griffith. All brand new facilities, bring it in with the 21st century.
Yeah, I just Googled that and I think it could be somewhere around $250 million for a redevelopment. And just with Zoe, she's looking for her first property down there. She's been to some auctions. Her favourite places, Cafe 262, and the wineries, her top three, De Bordeley, Yarran and Warburn. But Dave, there's hundreds of wineries in that area, is that correct?
It is correct, but there's one thing I'll mention. There is a bakery in the main street of town where you will get the best cannoli that you've probably tried in the country. And you go into that bakery, it's literally, every time I went to Griffith, it had probably 40 people. Can't remember the name of it. I could look it up and find out. But yeah, best cannoli I've ever had.
Yeah, definitely. Find out their name because we'd like to give them a shout out on the Our House podcast. What are we seeing in Griffith in terms of numbers? And let's be mindful, there's some places around Australia where it's really hard to get into the market. What about entry level in Griffith?
Griffith offers certainly a very affordable entry point. You know, like we're talking median house prices down there for around $350,000 to $375,000, which is really, really affordable. Great little town, Griffith. I've actually visited there a couple of times as well. Some fantastic wineries, some of the best wineries in the country down there. And, you know, very, very young as well. A young demographic down there. I know there's certainly a hard-working population.
Look, I'm actually just looking at the roadmap of Griffith. And I mean, that's the evidence again of that wonderful architect, town planner, Burley Griffin. We have the central circular drive around there. There's not a Parliament House in the middle of that one though, but that's certainly the town centre, and then it radiates out. So it's uniquely well-planned home. Now you're pretty much spot on with your figures there too, Matt. Now mine go back to over the last 12 months. Medium sale price for a home, $381,000. The suburb growth, and this is Griffith itself, but it's a big town centre. So it certainly takes into some acreage as well. Some larger parcels of land, but predominantly freestanding homes. We've had a suburb growth 7.3% over the last 12 months. And Steve, you've got your finger right where I want to turn the page on those facts and figures there too. Rent yield is up by 4.5% growth on it as well too. First quarter of 2020, we had rents up to averaged out again, but $440 per week. But it seems to be the average rental price down there's probably around about the $300, $350 a week, Matt.
Yeah, the rental yields down there are quite strong and they're definitely following the increase there of property prices. You mentioned, was it 7.3%? over the last 12 months, but rental yield of a circa, you know, around 5.5%, which is really, really strong. Another thing that's very, very consistent throughout the regional suburbs, particularly throughout Australia and New South Wales, is low vacancy rates. We're seeing vacancy rates here in Griffith of 0.4%. Like that's incredible. That's basically barely a house available, which obviously is going to prop up that rental market as well and continue to have strong yields.
One thing I'll be thinking about the rental market, remember such a strong fruit and vegetable growing area there. They've always relied upon overseas tourists and students predominantly with that. Now the students and tourists happy to throw a tent or a swag on somebody's property or live on the property. Now that those people are not available for the duties, they're having to employ people from around Australia. There's special grants being given. Lots of it is being government funded as well now too. So that's what's actually decreased the rental availability, because these people are not showing a swag under the farmers in the farmer's milk shed. They're actually taking out a rental property, and that's going to continue to be a really strong demand for rents down there as long as we have the foreign students and any foreigners excluded from Australia coming to aid with the fruit and vegetable picking.
One thing that stands out for me is they've had double-digit growth on numerous occasions. So 2003, 2005, also 2015, 14.3% growth. Last year, 14.2, and that's with sales of around 250 to 300 plus properties. So Matt, some really impressive numbers.
Yeah, for sure. There are a lot of transactions there. And you mentioned a couple of those students and workers that are working in the fruit and vegetable industry down there. And I'm wondering how many of those are paying rent on the books and how many are paying cash, right? So these figures could be very, very altered.
Could be thrown right out there. Look, I've just done a really quick printout, but basically you can buy yourself a fairly new, I'd say less than 7 or 8 year old, 3 bedroom, 2 bathroom home, double lock up garage, 720 square metres, only a kilometre or so from town centre for $430,000. And where we're looking at a similar rental return on a property like that as well too, let's go to something fairly new. Somewhere around about the $400 a week mark on it. Good established 3 to 4 bedroom home, 2 bathrooms, double lock up garage. Averaging seems to be very consistently around the $400 a week.
So you could do what Sharon and I did and buy your investment property first in a place like Griffith, where you could almost have positive cash flow, and then later down the track, look to buy your dream home somewhere else.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that it's becoming more and more popular, right? It's what people refer to as rent vesting. So you rent where you want to live and you invest elsewhere. And it's certainly a viable option. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're stepping onto the property ladder for the first time, or if you're a very sophisticated property investor with multiple properties, it's certainly a viable option to be rent vesting.
All right, boys, we're off to beautiful Port Macquarie. We used to go there for family holidays. My daughter Talia would have been about 7 or 8 at the time, and last year she went back there on placement. She's also a speech pathologist, and she loved it there. And there are a couple of places she wanted me to mention. First of all, Hijacked is a CrossFit gym, and they were also welcoming there, so a shout out to those guys. The Koala Hospital was another place that she really loved. They've got some fantastic surf clubs. They've also got camel rides on the beach in Port Macquarie, so that's a real tourist attraction as well. And if you love surfing, we had some epic surfs at Lighthouse Beach. How about you, Rod?
Middle Rock, thank you very much, down Lake Cadoy. And certainly Camden Haven, the right-hander off the breakwall there, is not a bad little spot either, Steve. Well, one thing we're aware of, it's a little bit like Spike Milligan used to say about Woy Woy, gentlemen. The average age certainly peaks demographically very high proportion. In fact, we're looking at, and this is just Port Macquarie, the suburb itself, but again, lots of suburban areas, there's units, apartments, but generally freestanding homes. We're virtually close to 16,060 plus. We're just under 12,040 to 39, and in complete comparison to Griffith, the 20 to 39 year age group only makes up approximately, let me see, I'm trying to, about one third of the entire population there. So it is, it's certainly an aging population, but that's the reason that there's great opportunity and good buying there too, because with the population such high proportion in their 60s, Matt, fair to say they're thinking about downsizing out of that big 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom home with huge grounds and gardens. They're trading down to something in their retirement that's a lot easier to manage. The other one is to the affordability. When we're looking at this as a coastal city, the family composition in Port Macquarie, 48%, huge proportion, couple with no children. Couples altogether is only around about the 35%, so huge proportion of families without children. You've got to be thinking about the demographics there with a 2, Matt, when we're looking at rental and investment opportunities.
Yeah, definitely. And I absolutely love Port Macquarie as well to visit, as a holiday destination. I love to surf. I've also been up there for Oztag, rugby league, touch football as well. Fantastic town. And I think with all of the infrastructure and the upgrades to the highway there, from here, the Central Coast where we are, I think it's only around probably three and a half hours to get there, which could be a bit of a game changer, especially with everything that's happened on the back of COVID. Fantastic spot to live. I know there is an aging population up there, but I sense that is starting to change, definitely. And you mentioned the breakwall and how good it is to surf there. One of my favorite cafes up there is Little Shack. It's on the breakwall. Go and get a coffee, get a B&E, walk up and watch the surf.
On Town Beach, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, that's phenomenal, that run there, right there on the town beach.
Yes, and if you miss the brekkie run, get some fish tacos. They're absolutely amazing.
All right, now as far as home ownership goes, We have, it's 40% of properties are fully owned. Now, the rental property proportion are far smaller than what it was in Griffith. We're looking at around about, I'm trying to work this out from circular graphs, but I'd be saying roughly around about 29 to 30%. A smaller number are actually purchasing properties than those renting. So a really small proportion compared to any other areas, and certainly the Central Coast, with people that are actually mortgage and purchase home, it's only around about 25% of the population. Whereas the Central Coast, Matt, I think it'd be fair to say it's probably 50% of the dwellings are owned by families with mortgages. Home loan repayments. The one thing that draws true with Griffith is it is virtually line ball. The largest proportion is that 1,800 to 2,400 per month. So that surprised me. Look at Griffith. The properties in Griffith, similar ones, you're probably paying 30, 40% less at Port Macquarie. And yet we're looking at, again, the highest proportion of mortgage is around that $2,000 a month. Surprised we got virtually line ball with Griffiths there too. Rent repayments are somewhat higher. The greater proportion is within the $350 to $450 a week, and that's going to include a great majority of homes there too. General household income weekly is on the high side. The greater proportion, now this may be investments, given the fact we've got a huge proportion of older population, they're living off investments, but a huge proportion that are averaging more than $1,500 a week. So really surprising, isn't it, when some of the information we can drill down in real estate, this is all through the Bureau of Statistics, Matt, is what you do with your clients, isn't it? You look at the demographics, you look at the returns, you look at the demand, and it's important to understand what the population strengths and weaknesses are before you advise somebody to pursue a rental property in a given area.
Just before you make a statement on that, Matt, the only double-digit growth in Port Macquarie, can you believe this, way back in 2003, and it was a whopping 26% growth. Another amazing stat, when you look at 2003, they had 1,066 sales that year. Moving forward, 2016 and 2017, around about 9% growth for Port Macquarie, over 700 and 800 sales respectively in those years. And in 2020 so far, they're around 4.5%. So not a bad year so far for Port Macquarie.
Yeah, and I think just going back to Rod's question before about doing the research, like this stuff's critical. You need to be looking at all of the relevant research, you know, the economy, you know, new buildings released, income, demographics, all of these things are major factors. In terms of these sales statistics, Steve, I think it's very interesting. Port Macquarie in the past has certainly been a retirees destination, and a lot of young people finish school and instead of staying in town, you know, they go and educate elsewhere. Maybe they go to Sydney, maybe they go to Newcastle, maybe they go to Queensland to further their education and then to further their careers. I think now, obviously, I don't want to keep harping on it, but given COVID and the opportunities now to work online and work remotely, I think a lot of people are probably going to stay around. And if you did move to Sydney, you know, maybe some years ago and you're a young professional, you know, there could be an opportunity to move out of Sydney and potentially move back home to Port Macquarie, to where you grew up, to where you're more comfortable, closer to family and closer to older friends. So I think there's going to be a potentially a small little surge there up in Port Macquarie, given those reasons.
The one thing I have to say with Port Macquarie as far as employment, if it's aged care, and it's not tongue-in-cheek, but you've got a 45% proportion of people that are not in the labour force. And we've already seen what the demographics is with age. So certainly for those people that are picking a career within the aged care services industries, and certainly medical as well too, there's got to be great opportunities there. But as I say, to me, one of the greatest opportunities is you're buying in a suburb that's, as far as geography goes, very similar to Wombril, Terrigal and Avoca, within, you know, surrounded by beautiful beaches and golf courses and things like that. We've got a median price right now around Terrigal, Wombril for a freestanding home of $900,000. We've got a median price in Port Macquarie of right now $585,000, 30% better off, or rather 40% better off as far as buying goes.
All right, boys, final words.
The one thing I'd say is if you're researching properties, get out in your car and do it yourself too, because you're going to helping the local communities out there.
Matt, you're the social media guru. How do people find us?
Yeah, well, after the first couple of episodes, all three of us were inundated by questions and some feedback over our socials. We did go viral on a national level, even potentially international. But yeah, certainly subscribe, like, share, comment, let us know your thoughts, tag us in your stories, and let us know where you're listening from across the nation.
Great to see you, boys. Awesome show, and look forward to doing it again soon. Just before we go, quick disclaimer, the information in this podcast is general in nature. You should consider if the information's appropriate for your needs and seek professional advice where possible. Thanks for listening. Look forward to catching you next time on Our House.